Okay, so my guest today on Newton Talks is Lauren Jane Barney, who's here to talk about her new book, Death Lines, Walking London's Horror History, which is a great book and is getting some really wonderful notices from places like Sight and Sound. And I think you had a good review in the 14 Times as well. Was that correct?
Yeah, the most recent issue. I was very excited about that.
So it's a really kind of boring opening question, this. But do you just want to tell us a little bit about what the book is? I mean, the title sort of gives it away, but if you could flesh that out and explain to us what the book is, then I'll launch into the rest of the questions.
Yeah, actually, weirdly, it is a bit strange because I think most people expect when they get this book, they're going to read it and it's going to be like a history book. They'll just read chapter to chapter and it tells you some stuff. And actually, it's like a walking guide. So it's a bit deceptive, I think, the title. So, but yeah, you basically have 8 walks that are about 2 hours long, and they take you through different areas of London. So like one's in Chelsea, one's in the East End, one's in Covent Garden. And they're themed around, you know, the things that came up in movies in that area. So as you can imagine, the Westminster walk's all about power, you know, that kind of thing. And so it's each of these walks takes you through the various locations that were filmed there. But then you also have, because I couldn't just narrow it down to 8 walks, which is terrible, I have whatever that theme is. So like with Westminster and power, other spots, other one-off places where a lot of films were made, but they don't necessarily work with the walk. They might be miles away that match that theme. So like, for example, I've got a walk that's set in the sort of Holland Park area, and that's all about ghosts and ghostly things. But there's some other very cool ghost spots like Enfield, which is miles away, and so I've got those one-off spots as well as the walks, and that hopefully is the book.
So you go around these different places in London and you highlight where particular horror films have located their scenes in these kind of iconic or maybe not quite so iconic locations.
Yes, it would have been good if I said that. Yes, so basically I was looking at all of the horror films that have been filmed in London, some of them really big ones, but other ones that are more like cult or lesser known, and looked at where they were actually filmed, or in some cases where they made a set to look like that location or try to look like that location. So the idea was it needed to be specifically a London location. It couldn't just be generic London, as it were.
So tell us a little bit about how this started as a project for you. What inspired you to write this book?
The blunt, honest answer is boredom, which is terrible. So I was doing my PhD, and as you know, you do this paper, you put all this time and effort into it, you submit it to people, and then they take months to read it and have you do your viva and your actual test, which is good because you prepare for your viva. But I didn't need all of that time to prepare for my viva. So I found myself really bored and I started doing quite a lot of walking tours of London. As you can hear, I'm American. So I was very excited to like see more of London, British history. And I really love horror movies. And I kept looking for a horror movie themed walk. And this was back before they did even the Vincent Price walks. This was back in like 2013, 2012. And there wasn't any. There were no horror walks of London. And I was complaining, well, not complaining, but I was bemoaning that I really wanted to do one. And somebody I was working with was like, well, you should do it. Like, why don't you do one? And I was like, oh, yeah, I can. And so I started researching it. And I started sort of, because I had been doing my viva and writing, I started writing it as one would write it. But I did the walks a little bit. And basically, the two kind of grew together. And once the walks got well known enough, my publisher actually heard about it and was like, oh, would you consider doing a book? And I had to put together the proposal. And they said, oh, we were hoping it would be more of a walks book, not a history book. And I was like, oh, right. That's what people enjoy. So it ended up becoming Deathlines.
So how long were you doing the walks for and hosting these walks? And what kind of responses were you getting when you did them?
Oh, wow. Very mixed bag, actually. So I started doing it about the next year's 2014, end of 2014, I did it. And that year, I really only did one, so that doesn't really count. But so I did it for at least 3 years before I started getting some traction for the book. But it was kind of on and off. So I started doing it and I was like, how do you advertise this? I have no idea. So I went on to Airbnb and they had, I don't know if they still have it, but back in the day, they had a way where you could have an hour or two with a local. And so you as the local could put up what you did. And I was like, horror walks in my neighborhood. And I think some months, absolutely no one signed up. So I had some months where there was absolutely no interest whatsoever. October, on the other hand, I couldn't do enough walks at all because everyone wanted to do a Halloween-themed walk. And so I learned from that process. But once I got into my groove and realized that, you know, people are more likely to want to do, if they do one not around Halloween, they want to do one that's in the center of London. They want to see the sights and, oh, there happen to be movies. So if you do one in Chelsea in June, nobody wants to go.
So when you were doing these, when you were writing the book, were they based on it solely on the walks that you'd already done, or did you have to invent new walks, or were the ones that were the kind of core walks that you did? How did you build up the contents of the book?
So I started with, I had about 10 that I really, really liked. I didn't do them regularly. I regularly did 4, but there were 10 that I liked and I'd like rotate. So there were, Chelsea was one that I did because it was very convenient for me. I lived in Fulham, so it was just down the road. I did the Holland Park one as well because it was convenient. And then I did the Westminster one because it was very popular. And then I did the Covent Garden one because Central London, very popular. But I liked all these other ones. You know, East End was fun, but it ended up being quite a lot of Jack the Ripper. So it wasn't as interesting to do regularly, if you know what I mean. I'm not a Ripper person. So they'd ask me Ripper questions and I wouldn't know. So I'd have other rotations, but there were those 10 and I was like, oh, I'd love to do these 10. And they basically said, well, realistically, they need to be 2 hours or under. So one of my walks, which was recreating the 28 days later walk, was dead on its feet. That's 3.5 hours. Nobody wants to do that voluntarily. So that one was out of the book. And then I had to sort of decide, basically kill my babies. I had to decide between the remaining 9, which ones were going to work. And then I ended up tweaking it, actually. I made a walk that was along the Thames because I like that longer walk of 28 days later. And so I gutted 2 walks to make that walk. And yeah, basically it was a little bit of having it already and a little bit of playing around with the ones I loved. And the honestly, the stops I thought were really cool to visit that you wouldn't expect were in horror films. That was quite fun for me.
So when you were writing this, was it just a case of kind of writing up your notes, or was there a lot more research that you had to do? Because it's extraordinarily dense in terms of the amount of references that you get into this book. I mean, it's every... You know, well, how many, I don't know how many films you actually reference, but obviously a lot, and so obviously some more than others, and some crop up multiple times.
Yeah.
In different works. So like, what was the kind of research process for this?
So it started out very much as, I know, I'll look up every movie that's in London. And I started with an Excel spreadsheet. And my very first version of that, I think, had only 86 films. And then the more you tell people, oh, I'm looking at films that are set in London, the more you discover there's actually a lot more than you think. And so it honestly, part of it evolved as I was doing the research for the book, because I'd be talking about it more. And so I'd learn about other movies that I hadn't known. Like, there's a film called Dream Demon from the 80s that I don't know how many people have watched. It's pretty, like, minimal. But it has several really good London locations. It has... it's got very much a Hellraiser vibe, and it's from the same era. So it's got a really cool story. And so like movies like that would crop up that you don't just IMDb or you don't just come across because you know them. And so I ended up with 146 films that made it into the book. The Excel spreadsheet still exists and it's longer now. It's up to 151. but yeah, so I tried to, I think I actually only managed to fit in about 120 just because of the logistics of locations. But I what I did was every time I could, I'd try and find new movies, add. So at the start, the walks that I did were probably pretty basic. It was all the films everyone knows. And the more I did it, the more I learned, the more I got to add. And that probably was part of it as well. I remember having, when I was doing the book, post-its under each. I had this wall of post-its and it was the location and then all the like weird branch of all of the. And I think in the end, I ended up picking the walks where I could shove the most movies into these locations as possible because I wanted to try and get all 146 in. I didn't, but I tried really hard to.
And this is hopefully the final boring question. How long did it take to write? And I'm only asking these questions because I'm fascinated in how you would build up something like this. So how long did it take to write, would you say, from the point where you knew you were going to write the book to publication? Or first draft, should we say, of you know, your manuscript?
So when I got the sort of, oh, somebody's going to pick this up in 2018, I basically had the like bones of the walks. So that must have been lots of research and lots of time ahead of it. So I probably should add on, let's say, about 6 months worth of research to this. But then it would only took a year and a half to write the rest of the book. So I did it really fast. That is a good shocked face. I blitzed through it. But you have to remember that I had most of it at my fingertips. It was a matter of making it smooth and making it work and making it interesting rather than going to find these movies. So if you think about the fact that I did those walks for 3 years ahead of time, how much research would that have been before I started?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's kind of a false and artificial question, really, isn't it? Because these ideas are often percolated for years before we even put pen to paper or before you start tapping out on the keyboard, right? So yeah, it was a rubbish question, Lauren. I'm sorry. Sorry about that. I
No,
hope that.
it's one everyone asks, don't they? They're like, oh, how long did it take to write this? And you sort of part of you wants to be like 6 years, and then part of you is like, well, literally in front of the computer a lot less.
So, tell me then, what is the distinction then, would you say? And it's coming back to something that you said earlier around this idea, and I've got my notes in front of me if it looks like I'm reading off them. This idea of films that just happen to be in London because that was the production location, and films that are set in London as if London becomes a kind of character within the film. The locations are iconic, and that's used to add meaning to how we respond to the film. Did you draw a distinction between those two types of films, or what do you think that distinction might be?
Oh, that's an amazing question because it's a huge one. I mean, I think on an obvious level, there's a degree of it in which it's movie to movie. Some directors will be like, well, of course I'm filming in London because I live around the corner or this is my option, but they then do something with that. They know the area well, so they'd make a lot out of it. I mean, Edgar Wright comes immediately to mind. He lived in North London, he worked in North London, but he made North London a big part of that story and life in North London part of that story. But you also had, quite a lot of things, especially with the big companies like AIP and that. They threw up sets and like, oh, this is Seven Dials. There's no dials, it's a road. You're like, this is an iconic feature of London that has seven streets coming off of one point, and you don't even include that in a still. It's just a road. So you get a bit of a mix with the people, even when they intentionally put it in London. And like that film on off the top of my head is it's a film about a sort of a doctor, and he works in the poorer side of London. So Seven Dials, back when it was in the 1800s, was a very poor part of town. And then he lives in Mayfair, and so it's about that contrast. So they were trying to do something with location, and they did it in the most half-assed way.
What film is that, by the way?
Oh, see, this is the trouble, is I was gonna name it, and then I'm completely blanking. It's on my Covent Garden walk, and I gave it not that long ago, and I'm trying to remember. It's I'm gonna be able to describe the film really well. Maybe the name will come to me, but it's Boris Karloff, and it's a black and white film, and he plays this doctor who's experimenting with anesthesia. And he's basically, when he takes it, he sort of becomes almost like drug addled. He's not quite a Jekyll and Hyde, but he's really odd. And when he does, he ends up going to this pub and they take advantage of him and have him sign off on death certificates. And Christopher Lee plays this character called Resurrection Joe, who's been killing people, and he signs off the death certificates for these murders, basically. You'd think I'd be able to remember the name of this movie.
I'm gonna read through and I'll edit this bit.
No, don't worry. What I'm going to do, really embarrassingly, is I'm going to look it up. I
Don't do that.
swear I know this film really well, and it's terrible,
Haven't.
but Boris Karloff and Resurrection Joe will do it because Resurrection Joe is a great. Thank you. Tony has just come in because he's overheard it. It's called Corridors of Blood.
Oh, okay.
Corridors of Blood is the name of the film. It's a really good film, actually, and I even own it. It's terrible that I didn't remember.
So, but I'm interested in that idea. And I suppose some films they use iconic locations. Some locations become iconic because they've been in these films, right? That's
Yeah.
that they come from two different. You come from two different angles here, I suppose, on that. And what kind of what other distinctions do we think we get aesthetically or in terms of mood between those films that are set in these locations but not actually shot there, and the ones that actually use the locations? I'm thinking of something like Edge of Sanity, with Anthony Perkins, which I know you mentioned, which I think was mostly set in, shot in Hungary, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah, can you say something about that and the way that London is depicted in when we're actually live there and when we're recreating?
Yeah, I mean, Edge of Sanity is a fantastic example for that because so much of that film is surreal, but it's based on a very London story, the East End, which is Jack the Ripper, for anyone who hasn't seen it. And you don't get shots that are recognizably London, but because the story is London, the viewer is sort of willing to believe it. And I think you can tell so often about what shots are used, how important London is to the story. Like you have... films like, I mean, 20 Days Later comes immediately to mind, but you have films like From Hell, which were actually not shot on location, but they give you these amazing CGI'd shots of the iconic Spitalfields Church, for example, or they give you these fantastic shots where you see the Dome of St. Paul's, and they're trying really hard through those recognizable things. I mean, okay, Spitalfields is probably not so much, but the Dome of St. Paul's is instantly recognizable across the world. You get films like Day of the Triffids, where you have, you know, the shots of Piccadilly Circus, again, immediately recognizable, totally empty. And so they're playing with that visual. And it's because you get these very specific shots of London, of recognizable London. But I kind of personally love the films where it's not recognizable London, but if you are a Londoner or if you know something about London, it's a very London location. So you get these great films like The Haunting of Julia. It's set in and around Holland Park, that kind of area. And it's this kind of posh area of London, and it's a very quiet area of London, but it has that London thing of everyone's really isolated. You have people at your doorstep. You can't look outside your house without seeing hundreds of other people's houses. I look outside my flat and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 flats, and you're totally alone. And that is a very, I mean, it's a city feel, but there is something very London about the locations and the way they shoot it and the way she's acting and the way everyone interacts. There's this sort of interesting, I think as an American British distance, the social bubble distance. And so it feels very London, and it's a very London experience. And I think they did, you know, consciously choose this location because it has that kind of social interaction, because it's based on a book that is set in London and it's playing with London classes and things like that. So weirdly, I think sometimes when you don't get those iconic London moments, you still have writers, directors, whoever, who are really invested in that London lived experience. And so interestingly, sometimes the iconic London is a bit of a wash. You sort of go, okay, I've shown you big, fancy London with the Thames and the Shard and the whatever. So now you know we're in London. We're going to go act like we're, you know, anybody off the street in America, in Italy, in whatever. But I've made it London, so you know it's cool. Whereas a lot of the London stories are in the bits that aren't as recognizable.
Would you say there's a difference there between the origin of the film? So if it's a big American film or a non-British film, they tend to rely more on the iconography of London more than the homegrown films. I mean, maybe that's a broad sweeping generalisation, but I can see how it seems to be a Hollywood thing to depict London in a particular way, right? Yeah,
I think you're absolutely right. I think it's a bit the abroad thing. And I think you can even see that in the Italian directors who come over. There's the like glitz of London. And I think also, honestly, it's a budget thing. I think the bigger budget productions are invested in looking better than necessarily relating to the location. Whereas the smaller budget productions do tend to care a lot more about picking their locations right, making all those little detail choices. Because I imagine because they have to really think about the budget for it. And so they have to be like, if I want this London shot, how can I afford to do it? What part of London works? Can I do it anywhere else?
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think also from a kind of just a historical perspective and an architectural perspective, and even like a social history perspective, you're seeing a change in city, right? Or a change in culture, or a change in country. You get it from, if you watch British television or British films that are set in London in the 1970s or made in London in the 1970s. I mean, it's completely unrecognisable to what we would see today, right? I mean, it's quite amazing. It seems like an obvious thing to state, but I think that's one of the most fascinating things about the book and about the way cinema works and preserves in time particular places, the mood of a place, or even the meaning of a place. Because no doubt when you were doing these walks, some of these locations were either not there, or they were changed, or is there anything interesting happening there? So yeah, tell me something about that if you can.
Yeah, of course. This is one of my favorite things about this. I love London through cinema, because even beyond horror cinema, because it's a time capsule. Someone once said to me, London's the city that eats itself. And they were totally right, because it's constantly changing. Even since I've lived here, you go back to the neighborhood that I was in and it's all gentrified now. It looks totally different. And you get that frozen moment in London. And it was so exciting for me, maybe because I'm an outsider, or maybe because I'd lived here long enough. I don't know which side of it. I'd go to a place and there's this really amazing film that I love called Theater of Blood. I don't know if you're familiar with it. It's Vincent Price. Yes, yeah, fantastic film. The theater that he's in, that he jumps off of at the end, used to be in Putney, right? Like two streets down from where I lived. It's a car park now. And part of me is gutted, but part of me also is thrilled that I can watch this movie and see what that neighborhood looked like in the 70s. And I can see that old theater, which is now totally destroyed. And I kind of love film for that, because you can have every London. You can have all the Londons that ever were. And I have very like romantic, not nostalgic because I wasn't here, but nostalgic feelings about that.
Yeah, that's really interesting. That kind of nostalgia for somewhere that never really existed, or you didn't know, or yeah.
It is funny because I think movies do that. You get that emotion of having watched the movie and the experience of it. And then when you go to the location and it's different, you're nostalgic for the one you saw, even though you'd never been there.
So when you were doing the walks, or even writing the book, how were you finding these locations? What was the process there?
Oh, dear. Part of it is thank God for Google Maps, because... Some of it was, okay, they have said they are in Soho. Soho is this big. And I go with my little man on Google Maps and go, that's definitely not right. That might be. And I picked like four or five places that the corners looked right, or the shop looked right, or the cornices above the doors looked right. And you go in person and you, with your little, like, thank God again for iPhones, with your stills, and go, yeah, that kind of works. But some of the work honestly had been done for me. There's this great website called Real Streets. I don't know if you know it, but you can you type in a film, and that what they've done is it's kind of like Wikipedia, and that anyone can contribute. So they put up stills and go, we think this is this location, or we have no idea, someone tell us. Sometimes it's as broad as, oh, this is Dulwich somewhere in London, and sometimes it's as specific as, we're pretty sure it's on this road, but we're not sure where. And somebody like me will go out and be like, ooh, I think it's here. So some of the legwork was done for me. Some of it's really easy. I mean, my Westminster walk is, you know, oh, that's the Mall. Oh, that's Parliament. You can tell right away. And sometimes I got really lucky. The Theatre of Blood thing, there's a couple locations in Putney. And I was like, I think I walked by there to go to the grocery store. And so I could just go out and you recognize it in your own head. But I remember as well some locations where you kind of know exactly where it is, but things have changed too much. So there was, look, Carnaby Street is the example that's like screaming to my mind. There were a couple of films that had parts set in Carnaby Street. One was Night After Night After Night. And I freeze framed this Carnaby Street and I could not get any of the road signs. And I walk down Carnaby Street now and I have no idea. All of the little roads that come off Carnaby Street are basically the same. And so I sort of have some locations in the book where it's like, on this road somewhere, this happened. And isn't that interesting? Distract you from the fact that I couldn't figure out where it was.
Well, I mean, that tells us something really, you know, fascinating anyway, right? I mean, the very fact that there's this almost, we can't quite pinpoint the exact places. There's an element of romance about that as well, I think.
Yeah, it is cool to think that there's some stuff that only the people who made it knew. One of the great ones, Hellraiser, there's the scene where they go to a Chinatown and they eat in a Chinese restaurant. And if you ask anybody who's willing to talk to you about it, up to, and thank God for the existence of Simon Bamford, up to Simon Bamford, who was in Hellraiser, do you have any idea what this was? They're like, not really. We kind of went and whoever let us in, and we didn't take a note of it. And it's so, even to them, it's like it's this great memory and it's slightly lost to time. And that's really perfect, isn't it? Because everyone will who's seen that will recognize it in their head, but never be able to know where it is in real life.
So, what are some of your favourite London located horror films then? What kind of inspired your love of horror and London?
I mean, if we're going back to, Baby Lauren's inspiration, I loved Alfred Hitchcock movies. I watched them with my dad. So it actually wasn't even horror movies. It was stuff like The Man Who Knew Too Much, or actually The Lodger is a horror movie. It's the first silent movie I ever saw ages ago with my dad. And as well, it was something about there's this 1931 Dracula. There's this scene with the big cement lions in Trafalgar Square, and it's just a stock shot. They didn't film there, but it's you see this big lion, and it says in Gothic lettering London, and it seemed to someone from North Carolina so exciting and exotic. You looked out my window, and there were grass and fields, and there's fog, and so there was that kind of great what you were saying earlier, the idea of London. It wasn't even actual London. But as I sort of grew up and became more knowing that the films that I love shot here. One of them, ironically, is an American, and my book's named after it. Gary Sherman's Deathline is an amazing and fascinating film. And it was one of those great films where I'd seen it as an American not living in London. And it was cool. It was weird. I didn't get a lot of the subtlety because it's so much about class system and social interaction and what was going on at the time in the 70s. And then I lived here a while, and you rewatch it, and the way people interact, you get because you've seen it now, you've experienced, British being not rude to each other, but being uncomfortable with people they don't normally know how to talk to. Like Detective Calhoun has this, Donald Pleasance has this great scene with Christopher Lee, who's like MI6 guy. And you watch it as an American never being in London, you're like, oh, it's his boss, he's weird. And then you watch it again, having lived in London, you're like, oh, everyone thinks everyone's a terrible person in this scene, and everyone's so shady. And you don't realize it till you see it. So there's a lot of affection I have for that film because living in London helped me learn about it. But if you're thinking about like those great, wow, they shot London really well. It's got to be Day of the Triffids. There are those amazing scenes of empty London. And then when I lived through COVID, took on a totally different meaning, seeing London empty. So yeah, there's a lot to love actually, but those are probably some top ones.
And are there, what would you say? Maybe this is again a kind of banal question. Are there areas that are more frequently appearing in film than others? And what are those areas?
Yeah, I mean the obvious one or the unsurprising ones, things audiences will recognize will constantly be brought back to again and again. So you see shots of Parliament from the Thames up, right, left, down and center constantly in film. Even in films where none of the rest of it's shot in London, they'll do a stock shot or they'll do a stock shot of St. Paul's. But I think for me, the one that I always found really interesting was you have quite a lot of people who use, of course, central London, all the recognizable Londons, the Covent Gardens and the Westminsters and that. But then you have quite a big pocket of films that used North London. And that was quite cool for me. And they are grittier films. They tended to be films that are I mean, with the exception of Edgar Wright, they tended to be films that were part of that hoodie horror generation, or you have Hellraiser. They're films that are more life is hard, life is challenging, and it can be horrific, and this is how it can be horrific kind of way. And I kind of liked the idea that it's London's version of the suburbs. You get those suburb horrors in America, and London's version of the suburbs are these kind of stories, and they always seem to use North London for that. Conversely, though, whenever I sort of looked at all of these, I was always amazed that there weren't very many shot in south of the river. London has a thing about South of the River, and I'm sure you're smiling. I'm sure you know why, because you actually would know this. But there's so few films. I mean, okay, Attack the Block is shot near Oval Station. there's a few things that are on the South Bank, but you know, there's Lewisham has that great vampire movie that I'm blanking on now that has Julian Sands in it. But mostly you couldn't do a walk. You'd have to do like a drive through South London to go between all 10 locations.
That's really interesting. I mean, you said I had a knowing smile. I didn't have a knowing smile. I know nothing and I know nothing about London, really. I'm learning more from this conversation than I have in my entire life beforehand. So that is fascinating. And I don't have a reason as to why that's the case. But it is fascinating.
It really is. I'm always interested in this because I remember when I first moved here and I came for school. So school had helped me. There was like a list of places that out of towners could go stay with families, basically. And so that's where when I lived, and it was up in Kensington, so North London. And I remember some people being just like, oh, good. No one goes south of the river. And every now and then, Londoners will say this. They're like, oh, I don't want to have to go south of the river. Or, oh, I can't be bothered going south of the river. And I'm like, they will go to Richmond. They will go to Southend, but they won't go, you know, half that distance south of the river. It's fascinating. There should be some sort of cultural study on this. I don't understand.
No doubt there'll be some listeners who know the reason for this, or they can fill us in on that.
Yes, so, message.
Yeah. What would you say, is there another international city that is comparable to the way that London is depicted on screen, or the way that London has been depicted on screen in these films? When you were writing the book or now, is there anything that's cropped up that's, you know,
yeah,
you think might be similar in terms of the way that it's depicted? Either in terms of the amount of times that it's on the screen, or the kind of the use of the city. I'm thinking New York might be an immediate comparison there.
Yeah, I will say immediately and with total honesty, I won't know about Asian horror. I won't. I do enjoy Japanese horror. I don't know the cities well enough, and I haven't looked into that enough. So I definitely, you're going to have to take out at least, you know, 2/3 of the horror films that have been made when I answer this question. But in terms of sort of Europe and America and Canada, New York is the one that has an identity in the way that London does. People sort of have an image or an idea of New York that's really well formed around certain images, certain characters even. There's the sort of like the gritty New York, and there's the anyone can make it in New York, and those are the kind of two big ones. And you get quite a lot of stories in drawn to New York because of New York's sort of fame and everything that it meant in the various eras. I mean, obviously you got 60s New York, 90s New York, both very sort of popular for their own reasons. And, you know, 70s had its own separate thing. So you get a lot of returns to New York because for cultural reasons. And you get that with London as well. It has its moments. You get swinging London horror, you get sort of 80s horror. But I think weirdly, New York, there's so fewer. I thought when I did London, I was kind of curious where else were there a lot of horror movies. So I tried to have a look at the New York horror movies, and it's plenty, but it's far fewer. I mean, I'm sure somebody else will be able to find more. But I was able to only find half the ones that I could in London. And I don't know if that's because it is more expensive to film there, because it is a much smaller area. London has so many different parts of it. I don't know if part of that is, in all honesty, that Hammer horror and London and horror have a whole different relationship. You know, you have this major studio that pioneered sort of 50s and 60s horror, working for Bray right outside of London, drawing on a lot of London stories. And interestingly, again, in horror, so not more broadly in film, we're the home of the Gothic. England's the home of the Gothic. And so there is this really long history of writing stories, just horror stories, even back to ghost stories in M.R. James or even earlier, where they're set in England. And so to anyone outside of England tends to end up being London. So you have quite a lot of really interesting international focus on London, in the same way, as you mentioned, with New York, you do. In the U.S., you don't really have anywhere else. L.A. is kind of identityless because it's the home of film. So you have so many more films made there, but they're maybe set elsewhere, even though they're filmed in L.A., or they're kind of without a soul or an identity. You do get quite a lot now in Canada and America, things like Victoria and Vancouver are cheaper to film in. But again, they end up replacing other cities. They don't have the same identity. The one, though, that does, on the flip side, come up regularly, but again, I don't know the specifics in terms of a city identity, but you get quite a lot of, if something's happened in London, it'll happen in Paris films. I don't know if you've noticed that. For some reason, you know, werewolves in London, next one will be Paris. Zombies in London, the next one will be Paris. It's nowhere near as has doesn't have the identity London does. It's definitely not got the history in terms of horror it does. But for some reason, if you do something in London, everyone goes, aha, let's do it in Paris. So those would be the two.
Maybe this is following on from that question. How then, writing this book and studying it and researching it and the reception to it, how has it enhanced both your knowledge of London and knowledge of cinema? I mean, I guess you sort of answered those questions already, but if you could do it more succinctly. That made it sound as if it was driving you. I didn't mean that. What I meant was, essentially, this is crystallizing the entire questions that I've asked you. So how does it... enhanced your knowledge and appreciation, shall we say, of both the films that are set in London and London itself?
I think that in terms of the city itself, I've had to learn so much more about the different faces of London. That's the easy one. And London is a big city, but it isn't just sprawling for the sake of sprawling. Like back home, we have places like LA, Miami. They're big, but they're all centered on a core. London has neighborhoods in a way other places don't. And each one has an identity. And when you follow filmmakers into those neighborhoods, especially ones who know them, you get really different experiences. You get really different stories. Sometimes you even interact with totally different cultures you wouldn't expect to. And I think that's one of the amazing things about London and cinema, is because it does offer so much. You can find a bit of anything in London. And so you can film a bit of anything in London. In terms of cinema, I think the big kind of lesson it taught me was how little I understood British cinema before I did it, because there's so much more to British cinema than what we think of as the big mainstream films, the big ones that everyone knows the awards or the famous actors from. There's actually quite a lot of really amazing cinema in Britain that comes from exactly what I was just saying, people in their neighborhoods who can't get the same kind of like studio attention, but go at it, go for a film, try and make a story, try and tell really amazing stories. And it's, I think, honestly, why I got really interested in indie film, which is luckily how I met you and a lot of other wonderful people. But it was because I discovered films that, like, okay, you know, everyone goes, oh, you know, Nil by Mouth's a great example. But there's, for every Nil by Mouth, there's 100 other films that you should totally watch that have the same authenticity, that have the same, not literally the same story, but their own real story to tell that you can fall in love with. And it's so much bigger and deeper and more interesting and more complicated than I had any idea about. And so weirdly, I learned a lot about London through the cinema.
So that's and that leads me on to another question, which I hope you don't mind me asking. So you are also a fiction writer as well.
Yeah.
And you're also an actor as well, and you're also moving into production as well, in terms of shooting and making short films and things like that, and maybe beyond that. Has this enhanced your understanding of the importance of place and location at all, or is that not a consideration when it comes to your writing your fiction or planning your script writing or your filmmaking?
That is such a cool question. You know, that's an awesome question. I definitely am aware of it more, but I think weirdly, when I started it, I thought it was, location was everything. I kind of wanted to like go around the gospel of every filmmaker has made this location choice and invested a lot in it, and so you should really care. And I learned that that's not true. Spoiler alert. But that sometimes it is. And so if you care about location, care about it 110%, and it'll matter and it'll make a difference. And if you don't care, that's okay too, but make that decision consciously, because you can make some really great stories. You can make some beautiful movies. You can create really interesting dynamics by specifically deciding the location doesn't matter, or by deciding it does. And I think a really good example of that is that, you know, I did a book all about locations, and then my very first short film, which has just come out, is set in the mind and has absolutely no location, is completely abstract. So I dove full on into the opposite. And I think you get some really great results from it. And I think the amazing thing that I still haven't gotten a handle on, but that I love watching filmmakers like you, like Tony, like Alex do, is that sometimes you don't have the choice. You want the choice. You would love to be able to film in a specific location and you can't.
I am giving a knowing smile now, by the way.
There's And what you all are able to do to create the mood you wanted from a location you could never get, that to me is really some of that. You know, people say the magic of cinema, cinema's lost its magic. Go to an indie film set. It is magic what you have to do, what you can create out of kind of nothing. And that is something I still would love to find a way to do in my writing. I haven't figured it out, but there is something really special to that, seeing people like you do it, that is my like next big writing goal, is to find a way to recreate that limit, and then that the limit gives you so much more than you could have imagined, because there's something special to experiencing that as a bystander. And I'd love to do that for my readers. And doesn't that sound really pretentious? I'm so sorry.
It doesn't sound pretentious at all. So let's talk just briefly about your next project. I think you've told me you've got a fiction project and a writing fiction project rather than a film, and also a non-fiction book
Yeah.
in the works. You want to tell us a little bit about those projects?
I'd love to. So the next book that's coming out that people will be able to access is my very first sort of fiction book. It's a science fiction, so it's a bit of a departure for me. I'm better known for sort of doing horror writing. It's called Occam's Dream. It's novella. It's coming out in February of next year, so you've got some time. But I think pre-order will be in the autumn. So hopefully, if you follow me, you'll be able to see a lot of that coming up. It's about a woman who her job is to analyze dreams. She reads them to try and get information out of them and to try and understand how dreams work, basically. And in the course of her job, she also practices meditation to try and separate those two worlds. But during one meditation, she has a sudden like flash attack of an experience that isn't her own, that she doesn't know what to do with. And it's how she tries to figure out what that is, if it's to do with her work, and what it means. So hopefully intriguing.
Sounds terrific.
Thanks. And then the nonfiction one, I'm still doing the actual research. So as we said at the start of it, who knows when this will come out, because I'll say it takes a year to write, but I've already been researching it for two. And I'm writing it with my partner, Tony Martin. We are writing about plant horror. So this is a book that is going to be kind of a guide to all of the films where plants are the main central villain and actually like interact with, not just are in the background or our theme, interact with the characters in a real way. It's been a lot of fun. We're very much taking a serious approach, but making it as fun and interactive as possible. So like chapter titles are things like Frankenvine and Natural Thorn Killers. It's supposed to be engaging, exciting, and hopefully get people interested in these movies and watching those kind of movies. So those are the two books on the horizon.
Well, that sounds really good. Listen, once again, thanks very much for coming on. And I do appreciate it's taking ages for us to get around to doing this. That's my fault. I know you said you were going to come in a while ago. So I apologize for that. But thanks very much for coming on, and thanks very much for making it such a really interesting experience for me. And also thanks very much for writing the book. I mean, it's pretty special, right? Because there's nothing really quite like it. And it's not just I'm saying it. People who have a better profile than me are saying very nice things about your book.
Thank
So you must be really delighted with that. And I hope the sales are going well.
you. Thank you. I've been amazed is the only thing I can say at the response to it. I've been really, really lucky. May I be very cheeky and ask you a question to do with having read it now?
Yes, absolutely.
I'm curious, was there any walk or film or something that you really liked, or that you thought was sort of weird or different? I'm always liking to ask people who know films really well if anything kind of caught them.
Yeah, I was more interested in the ones that were just set in the one place. And actually, I literally opened the book just a second in front of me, and it's fallen exactly what I was going to say, which is St. Paul's Cathedral. Just
Oh.
so that was the proof then that I was reading it, because it opened at the exact page, right? So that was what I was really kind of interested in, though, in those places where the kind of single locations, really. I mean, and I look, just looking through it, some of the films that are in there, I'm not either that much of a fan of necessarily, but I just like the idea, like it's Life Force and things like that. But I quite like the idea of these kind of single locations that really stuck out for me. But also about the book, how eclectic it was, and like how Life Force is about, she walks around
totally naked.
Right? So you get that cropping up multiple times. And more than anything, it's my own ignorance, I think, with London and where I'm going and what these places are. So with some of them, I didn't really have a great understanding of what I was actually, where these actually were, because I hadn't done the walks, or I'd been to part of them, but not all of them. And oftentimes it was actually the really nice illustrations that you've got in the book, which I forgot to ask about, that set off the imagination. And I can, because it looks like a map, it's like a drawn map, so I can... So that really kind of sparked my imagination. Who did the illustration, by the way?
Natalie K. Thatcher. She's amazing. I'll tell her. She'll be so thrilled.
It's a really lovely touch, actually, to the book, to have those, because it gives it a kind of I'm going to say hand drawn. I mean, that's a really obvious thing to say, but it gives it a kind of folky element to this, right? That's that really makes it. Gives it a kind of personal touch,
yeah.
Which goes really well with your writing and the way that it's just infused with so much enthusiasm. So your question's really good, but it would take me a long time to get through this and to do all the walks, right? So I've read the book, but I haven't done the walks. More than anything, it was just reminding me of how many films that I had completely forgotten about. And I think, if anything, I think it was down to that kind of nostalgia for these places that maybe I never visited, or I'd seen on television when I was a child. And things like Frenzy, which I'm not that much of a fan of, but the fact that these places, you know, either no longer exist or exist in a completely different way, is the main takeaway I had from the book. You write about Theatre of Blood. I mean, that whole film looks like it's on its, the locations look like they're on its, their last legs anyway, right? Right? I mean, that's sort of the point of it. And the very, I mean, it's simultaneously the kind of, maybe the weakness in the way that film looks, but also that it's great strength as well, that it's, they just shot this in the locations that they're set in, that gives it its kind of power, I think, or at the very least makes you return to it over and over again. And I think that enthusiasm from the book really comes out. For example, I've just opened the book at Kew Gardens, and I couldn't tell you where that is. I don't know anything about it, but the only thing I know is it comes from your book. So I've got, well, I mean, that's one thing that's really good about the book. I think that it's got a lot of use. Right, not books. Not many books have a use, but if you live in London or you visit London a lot, the book will really come in handy for you. So I think that's one of its selling points.
Thank you. That really
does that answer your question, Lauren?
No, it does, and I have to say it means a lot. I love that. I love that it was something that got you interested and excited, especially because I so much respect your film knowledge. So it means a lot. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's leave it there. Thank you very much once again. I really appreciate you coming on and giving us the time, and good luck with the book. And when your new book is out next February, then you'll have to come on again and we'll talk about that.
I'd love to. Thank you so much.